Broadcasting worldwide on internet radio.
Refreshing takes on legal strategies.
Straightforward answers to difficult tax questions.
Independent ideas on building wealth. The Refresher Wealth Show with Mark Kohler and Matt Sorensen.
Previously recorded with Mark as the host of The Mark Kohler Show.
Enjoy this fresh take on strategies to better live the American dream.
Welcome everybody to today's show. My name is Mark Kohler and excited to be here with you. Woo! Another beautiful fall day. Gorgeous this time of year. And glad that many of you are here with me. I know some of you, of course many of you, catch this show after the fact in the evening when you're working at your computer, catch it on iTunes, on your iPod while you're working out. Jeff, this goes out to you. Just want to throw that out. Jeff Thompson, he's running time with Mark once a week, just listening to the show. So just give you a shout out there. He mentioned that at one of our workshops last week. So anyway, welcome all new listeners. This is a radio show about building wealth, saving taxes, better living the American dream, covering all sorts of topics on asset protection and tax and legal planning. I'm going to do my best to bring you great content every week, special guests, and just make it happen. I myself am an entrepreneur, a small business owner, real estate investor, CPA, an attorney, and just a part of an incredible team with our home office back in Southern Utah. I myself live in Southern California, and I've got my partner Matt Sorensen running the Phoenix office, which we are having an open house for this Friday. I need to throw that out. November 2nd, this Friday, if you'd like to attend, check out the newsletter for locations. Call the office. You know the number. If you're listening to the show, you know the number. So just throw that in Google, markjkohler.com or KKOS Lawyers. Just give us a holler. We'll give you directions. But we're going to have free food and networking this Friday from 11 to 2 p.m. in Phoenix. So come check it out. I'll be there too. And let's see. But anyway, back to the home office. We've got KKOS Lawyers and K&E CPAs, an incredible team of CPAs, attorneys, paralegals, accountants, all of us working hard to serve clients around the country. We have more clients around the country than in one particular state. Just Southern Utah happens to be our India. Just affordable, beautiful little location, hidden from the rest of the world. Come visit us. We got a Walmart. We'll take you out to lunch. We'll hit Taco Bell. You'll love it. So anyway, welcome again to today's show, a very exciting topic. We're going to be talking about emergency preparedness. Now, we're all joking aside, I obviously have chosen this topic today based on the fervor and everything going on with this massive 100-year storm that hit the East Coast, Hurricane Sandy, big deal. We're broadcasting today, Tuesday, which is still just the tail end of some of this on the East Coast. It's still a huge storm moving across the East Coast and into the Midwest here soon and up through the Northeast, I should say. It's kind of got more of a Northeast than trajectory, but I know it's impacting millions of people. And what a great reminder, trying to look at the glass half full here, what an incredible reminder of how emergency preparedness should be a higher priority for all of us. And if we're going to talk about asset protection and building our wealth, we have to not ask ourselves, if a natural disaster occurs, it's when, and we need to be prepared for it. Here on the West Coast, it might be a different situation with earthquakes or wildfires, but we've got flooding taking place all over the country in different with this climate change, not to get political, but we know that something weird's happening with our climate because it's been just a wild ride. And there, I've got some quotes here we'll go over here maybe of just how many disasters are now besetting us around the country. So we know it's not if, it's when we're each individually going to be affected. So today's show is about that. And I've got some guests joining me today. We're going to be talking about different things that we could be doing with emergency preparedness. And if you saw the email and you're here with us live, we've got a lot of live listeners and callers in here today, I'd like to encourage you to consider this a call-in show. I would love to have input from anybody that would like to talk verbally here on the show. If you'd like to send me an email, please do so. You can send it now. If you have any thoughts or feelings on this emergency preparedness topic, shoot it to mark at markjkohler.com or mark at kkoslawyers, mark at ke-cpas.com. You know my email addresses. Shoot me an email. Just reply to the newsletter and it'll get right to me. Send me a comment about this emergency preparedness topic. What are you doing to prepare? Did you have an experience where you were unprepared? We would love to hear your thoughts. We're going to talk about emergency preparedness for our business and our personal lives. I'm going to share some things I'm doing. I've got a blog article today on the newsletter that it was some, I think, some incredible tips from the SBA, Small Business Administration, on their disaster assistance program. Some of their information that they share with small business owners around the country. So we're going to hit all that today and walk away with renewed commitment and effort to be better prepared. So that's today. So we're going to hit it. Exciting topic. Now, as many of you know that are regular listeners to the show, before we dive into the meat of the show, we're going to hit some tax and legal tips. Some tax and legal tips. I usually have the honor of bringing on some of our experts from the home office, whether it's, I should say our family of companies, because it could be from anywhere, Phoenix, California, or Utah. We bring in some of our experts that have been doing consults with clients throughout the week, and they're going to share something without divulging, of course, client private information, but some sort of experience they had consulting with a client and a little story or an example that we can all relate to. And a little tip that's very practical and helpful, and sometimes it will affect you, sometimes it won't. They're not always going to be general in nature. They can be very specific. So if you, in fact, have a topic you want us to hit once in a while with a tip, and it's not an open forum show, that's fine. Just shoot it over. We'd love to hit it. But today we've got Lee Chen on the line. He is an attorney with our Southern California office. He runs the KKOS Lawyers branch of the law firm here in Southern California while I head up the accounting firm. He's fantastic. He's helps clients all over the country and also goes to court here locally. So he's a lover and a fighter. We love helping him, what he does for clients with business planning, but also he knows how to litigate. So let's hear from Lee. Welcome to the show, Lee.
Hi, good morning, Mark. It's great to be on the show today.
Well, thank you. Regular contributor, you're just at home here on the show. Isn't this a nice day on Tuesday when you can just be on the show? Like,
well, it is, but you know, again, like you said, our hearts go out to what's going on the East Coast and the things that they're dealing with. It's just amazing what's going on there. So, and that's kind of like what I wanted to hit upon was, you know, with respect to our property owners or people who are looking for properties out there or renting properties. You know, some issues that arise when you have property that may have been, you know, destroyed or damaged in the property. I just kind of wanted to hit on some general rules on that. First, you know, what happens if the property is totally destroyed? You know, if you're renting to somebody or if you're a tenant or, you know, if you're buying a property, if it's totally destroyed, you know, the property is the purpose of that contract. So generally, if you know, if the property is destroyed, you know, the contract becomes null and void. So either party, you know, whether you're a renter or you're a buyer or a landlord, most of the time, you know, unless you have something specific in that contract that says otherwise, you pretty much can walk away. You just tell the other side, hey, you know, the whole purpose of this contract was to buy or rent this property, and you know, the property, you know, is no longer there, or you know,
well,
in general,
let's break this down a little.
Go ahead,
Lee. If I could interject here, let's break this down a little bit here.
Okay.
You used the phrase "you know" a couple times, and I'm like, oh, I don't know. This is stuff you fight out once in a while in court. So let's just talk about maybe real quick. If I'm buying a property, and this could be something we're facing in any situation around the country. It doesn't have to be Hurricane Sandy. As you're saying, we're using that as an example here. But let's say I'm purchasing a property or I'm selling a property, and the property is destroyed with some sort of disaster or vandalism or something like that. Well, let's reserve the I'm a landlord or tenant argument here for a minute. So if I'm trying to buy or sell a property that is destroyed, you're saying unless there's some sort of provision in the contract that addresses this, which most would not, unless you've got a very in-depth contract, the contract would be canceled, is what you're saying. And what do you do next? I mean, if you're the buyer, you could walk away. But what happens if you're the owner? Then you, I guess, you resort to an insurance claim. Walk us through some of the examples you would give in this situation.
Right. The contract is null and void based on, you know, if we're talking about general contract law, we're talking about a doctrine called impossibility of performance, meaning that the whole purpose of the contract was to purchase or sell this property. And if you don't have the property, it's impossible to sell. So for sellers of the property, you know, they may want to put something in there that says, you know, you usually see these terms in the contract governing risk of loss, or they're called force majeure clauses or something like that, which governs what's going to happen if there's a act of God or something like that. But, you know, absent something like that, you know, if the property is destroyed, you're the owner of the property. I mean, that is one of the big risks. So, you might be looking at, insurance claim or, you know, federal aid or something like that to get you back on your feet. But that's why, you know, you might want to think about this when you're entering into a contract, whether you want to cover this type of contingency.
Okay. So very good. So in general, under general contract law, and I think that's a key word you used, if you're the buyer of a property, and there could be obviously, we know that there was homes under contract this week that may not be there anymore or were substantially damaged. So there's going to be a flurry of probably some legal consultations, legal maneuvering, potentially lawsuits going on the East Coast as a result of this disaster. Isn't that interesting? Just bringing that to forefront, we look at all the people that are displaced and there's all this or that going on, but what about the legal ramifications of properties that were in escrow that may have damaged or be destroyed? So I think under general contract law that Lee is pointing out is if you're the buyer of a property and it's damaged or destroyed, you probably have a way out. You could get out. If you're the seller, you're going to go through the normal process of an insurance claim, hoping that insurance is going to help you with the damage or destruction, or look for state or federal assistance. So very, very interesting. Now, let me ask this up. Now, let's move to the next point here. Let's say I'm a landlord. I've got clients right now that have property in some of these areas that are being damaged. I just got an email from a client in New Jersey that I'm looking at right now. I'm impressed he's emailing me at this juncture. I wasn't expecting to hear from him. I emailed him yesterday. But so if we've got property out there where we're a landlord, let's take the landlord side. So I'm a landlord and I have a property severely damaged or destroyed. What would be the, you know, again, barring some unique provision in a lease agreement, Lee, what would you do if you're in that situation with a tenant and a property that's damaged? This could be anywhere again. Any of us that are landlords are going to probably face this.
Well, first I want to qualify something. When we're talking about destruction of the property or damage to the property, we're talking about total destruction, meaning that the property can't be used for what it is, for, you know, what it's supposed to be used for. Or a typical definition you may see in in statutes or in contract, if it's going to take more than 6 months to repair the property, it's probably destroyed. Okay, we're not talking about, for what we were just talking about, minor damage or damage where it can be fixed. That's a whole different analysis. So to answer your question on the rental side, it's the same thing. If it's totally destroyed, if the property cannot be fixed within 6 months, I would say, you know, both parties, landlord or tenant, have an out. Because that's the whole point of the rental contract, is to have a place to live. And if there's no place to live, you know, both parties have an out. You can't collect rent. Back rent is owed, but you generally, you know, the contract is pretty much terminated at the point of when the property was destroyed.
Oh, okay. Well, I like that.
Now, if the property is just damaged, a window break, a wall caves in or something like that, where, you know, you can still live in the property, you know, then you're going to the normal rules governing, you know, who has the obligation to fix and those type, you know, maybe specify in the contract or by law, you know, if it's uninhabitable, you know, most state laws says the tenants do not have to pay if the property is uninhabitable. So that may relieve the tenant for a certain period of time. If it is, if they can live in it, and it's just a matter of minor damage to the property, then, you know, depending on how you have it in the contract, usually it's going to be the landlord who has the obligation to fix that. And then if the landlord doesn't fix that, then you have to default to whatever's in the contract or the state rules with respect to what if a landlord's not doing what they're supposed to be doing. You know, do you repair and deduct the rent, or you, you know, take them to small claims court? You're dealing with the normal rules governing landlord-tenant relationships.
Okay, perfect. Well, excellent. Gosh, now we could probably pontificate about this all hour on our show. Fairly interesting, especially for some of you that have properties. Not all of our clients have rental properties. It's something I talk about a lot and advocate in my book, and I myself try to buy a rental a year, as you guys know. But this is good. Good stuff. So, Lee, thank you for bringing this to the forefront. Obviously, in any situation, whether you're a landlord or tenant, or you're a seller or buyer, and there's damage to a property, the property is destroyed, obviously one of the phone calls you're going to make, not only to your insurance agent, your family or friends, or, you know, all that, is going to be to your lawyer. What do I do? You know, and so please know that I guess Lee here, you could be a resource to anyone around the country. Give Lee a call if you have that and need that initial 15 or 20 minutes with the lawyer and say, where do I start? Locally, you may need representation, but if you just need some general guidance, please give Lee a buzz. So, Lee, thanks for joining us.
You're very welcome, Mark, and I just wish everybody well out there on the East Coast, rebuilding and just staying safe.
Yeah, good stuff. Thank you, Lee. So, folks, if you need to send me an email, it's Lee at KKOSLawyers. That's Lee at KKOSLawyers.com. Now, I get the pleasure of doing our tax tip today. I'm going to check with Lisa in the studio, and let's see what we've got. Yep, Lisa said, I'm the tipster on the tax side, and that's okay. I got something here. And boy, we got a comment from Thomas. He says that, Mark, tsunami warning in Hawaii right now. So very, very interesting. And he asks a great question. Lee, don't hang up. I know, Lee, you're listening. You'll stay on the line and listen to the show as one of our advisors. I'm going to bring you back here, Lee. I've got a question on our chat line that I think is a good one. This is from Thomas. He says, that brings up the question, should I settle with insurance company's first offer for replacement costs for a house that's totaled? What's the best way to help a tenant if a house is destroyed earlier this week? For a tsunami. So, Thomas, I know you're back in Hawaii here, so this is really, really interesting. So let's just play with that just for a quick moment. Let me bring Lee back on the line. Lee, are you still there?
I'm still here.
Dude, you're awesome. Okay, so this is an interesting little question that I would like to ask, too. I think there's a general rule here. I don't know. Should you ever settle with an insurance company's first offer? You may say, never. I don't know. But let me ask you that. Say I have a property that's damaged or totaled, and I've got the insurance company making an offer to me. How much hardball do you want to play? Is this something that you should take their first offer and run?
Well, you definitely need to be informed, and you know, as we say to anyone, you know, with respect to insurance, is you always want to read the policy. And I know that's people don't want to do that. It's 50 pages, and I don't understand it. But in terms of the cost to replace. You know, there are different ways to evaluate that. Is that, you know, fair market value? Is that the cost to rebuild? And you really have to kind of see what the policy says and compare that with the, you know, different methods of calculation. And Mark, I'm going to defer to you on the different methods of calculation. You're the math whiz,
right?
Not I. But you need to know what your options are. And so, I would always say, you know, maybe that first offer, you know, may be the best offer. That's not usually my experience as a litigator and as a negotiator. But, you know, things can happen. It could be you may be dealing with a very honest, reputable adjuster. And so it could be, but you still have to be informed. You still have to do your research. You still have to read the policy and compare.
That's a great comment. Great comment. And, Thomas, great questions. I would just add there's another issue here, and I'm not prepared to comment on it today. And I think this is one that we need to bring up maybe even next week. I'm going to type it in now. Is what are the tax ramifications of a destroyed property and an insurance payout? Now, there's different calculations and procedures in that situation, and I'm going to see if I can get – this is going to be really good for next week. I can already say that. I'm going to make a note right now to get one of our tax experts that are preparing returns daily in the office. Maybe it's Dustin Liddell or Brian. I'm going to ask them to comment on tax ramifications of a damaged or destroyed property, which is a whole form on your tax return. So we're going to hit that next week, folks. So please, again, this is another reminder of why it's so important to check out the show every week, put it on your listening schedule while you're multitasking at night, returning emails, or just kind of finding some time for some additional tax and legal support. So this is, again, a great, great topic. Lee, thanks again for jumping back on. Okay, well, let's hit our tax tip for today, and then we're going to dive into our emergency preparedness topic in full. We've got one of our special guests on the line, Danny Kirkham. We'll bring him out here in a minute. I've got, I'm excited to have him around the show. I'll introduce him here shortly. But what I'd like to bring up from a tax perspective, so everybody tune in, this is important. There is an important deadline that's coming down the pipe in 4 weeks, and most business owners don't know it's coming. And that is a health savings account contribution deduction strategy. So let me explain what I mean there. If some of you, let's kind of peel away the onion here. If some of you already have incredible insurance provided by an employer through a day job or because of your spouse and his or her day job, then great. Don't worry about this. If you have incredible health insurance and you don't need it, you don't care about it, and you just have this juice it up, pay for a $5 copay, your deductible is minor, and you've got this incredible insurance policy, then you can relax for 5 minutes. Go to the drink, go to the fridge and get another Diet Coke and come back. But for any of you out there that have the flexibility to consider a health savings account with your employer, or you're healthy and you have your own private policy, or you're an entrepreneur and are considering health insurance, or have a health insurance carrier that you could be flexible with, then let me bring up three little letters. Health savings account. Now, I know many of you know, Mark, hey, this is a topic you beat up all the time. You teach it in your workshops, in your webinars, on your newsletter, on your radio show. This is right. This is a very, very common topic. Heck, it's a whole chapter in my new book, What Your CPA Isn't Telling You. More CPAs need to be talking about health savings accounts. Your insurance agent's not going to talk about it because they make less money. Unless they tailor their business around that strategy, which is rare, we need to figure this out ourselves. So let me tell you the deadline that's coming. If you want a tax deduction this year in 2012 for your health savings account contribution, which you can make up until April 15th, you can put the money in today, you can put it in tomorrow, put it in January, I don't care. You have until April 15th, kind of like an IRA. You can put up to $6,050, $6,100, and again, all these little contribution amounts are adjusted for inflation. But you're looking at about $6,000 as a family, $3,000 or $3,100 as an individual. You can make that contribution anytime between now and April 15th. So what's the deadline, Mark? In order to do that, you have to have a high deductible qualifying health insurance policy in place by December 1st. Now, by December 1st, here in 4 weeks, you have to have that health insurance policy either converted to an HSA policy or go out and get a new one or just make sure it's underwritten by December 1st. You may not even pay your first premium till December. I don't care. But make sure the policy is in effect by December 1st. Now, what does a high deductible plan mean? A high deductible plan means that it's at least a $3,000 deductible if you're a family, at least a $1,200 deductible if you're a single individual. Now, what's cool about that is a higher deductible means a lower premium. And if you're generally healthy, you're going to be saving money. Woo! You hear me snap my fingers? Woo! Can you feel it? Okay, so this is important. So if you have a high deductible plan in place by December 1st, you can take an additional tax write-off of up to $3,000 for your health care if you're single, $6,000 approximately if you're family, and that's before April 15th of 2013 for this year. And that's a front page tax deduction. The money grows tax-free. It's not a use it, you lose it. You can carry it forward the rest of your life. These health savings accounts are amazing. And again, if you've read my book or been engaged with me at all in any sort of workshop or over my the history of my firm, you're going to know we are a huge advocate of the HSA for our clients. I don't make any money on it. I don't sell health insurance. I just want to see you save taxes. So, over the next two or three radio shows, you're going to hear me talk about this deadline. Do not forget about it, and it's going to be on the newsletter next week. So that's your deadline. Don't forget about it. Woo! All right. Now let's check the chat line. If anybody has a follow-up question on that topic, I want to make sure we're good. Nope. Oh, and Thomas, you got my little woo there. That's a patented sound there, the Mark Kohler woo. There we go. So thanks for that. All right. Now let's jump on to our topic for the day. And let me hit a couple points before we bring out one of our guests. I want to cover introduce this topic again for those that joined the show a little late. Again, we're talking about emergency preparedness for our business and personal. This is very, very important. Talk about asset protection. Many of us are trying to build wealth, build our business, and we don't prepare properly because it's not if, it's when we're going to face some sort of natural disaster in our life, and we need to prepare for it. It could be a tornado, a wildfire, a hurricane, a flood, an earthquake. Who knows? We've got to be prepared. And what's interesting here is oftentimes we don't prepare for our business, let alone our personal. Do we have the personal emergency preparedness stuff in our home? And I want to talk to one of our guests about personal preparedness. But before we get there, let's talk about our business for just a quick minute. This is an article I put in the newsletter today. It will be syndicated as a blog article as mine next week. You'll see more of that. So I guess on a personal note, let me just say this. Dimitri, my web designer and blog IT director, he's in New Jersey. Can you believe this? My web designer lives in New Jersey, and I couldn't get my blog posted on emergency preparedness in the last 48 hours because he's been hunkered down and evacuated from his place. So this is crazy. So even I myself have been impacted by this, at least in my business. So I wrote an article based on some Small Business Administration disaster planning guidelines. You can read these at sba.gov. Go to sba.gov and look at natural disaster planning. I have included in my article a PDF guide that's published by the SBA. It's got all sorts of websites and phone numbers, checklists, and ideas for small business owners. So let me give you a few thoughts here. I just want to bring this up. Now, this is a call-in show for those that have a comment. Please use the chat line. Please shoot me an email. If you'd like to make a comment online, and you're on the phone, press the number 1. And Lisa will bring you right up on the studio. If you'd like to call in from your, turn off your computer or turn off the sound and call in, there's a delay. So call in to 646-200-4285. How many of you have faced a natural disaster, were not prepared? What are some of you doing to get prepared? Give us some tips. We're all in this together. Let's help each other out. So I'd love to hear your feedback and comments. Now, what I put in my article today were tips for your business emergency preparedness. I'm just going to highlight some of these. Number one, do we have a checklist for the natural disaster that is most likely to hit our area? Do we have an evacuation plan? Do we have off-site storage of key records, safety measures that could help your office if a disaster strikes so that I can get back in business? Note this later in my list. Do we have a cloud server for all of our technical data, Are we, do we have redundancy? Are we doing offsite backup nightly? What's your plan? What's your plan? If you had to turn your business back on tomorrow and go down to Staples and buy a new set of computers, how long would it take you to get your business back up and going? I mentioned in the list, do we have a location offsite with all of our software, passwords, usernames, phone numbers, this and that? What do we have? Do we have a checklist of how I could get my business back online anywhere if needed? These are all numbered in my newsletter, but have we taken pictures of our business location to document assets and inventory? This is something I thought Lee was going to bring up a little bit. I mean, we covered a ton with Lee on the phone there. But with us being landlords, are we taking pictures of our rental properties on a regular basis? If we had to make an insurance claim, do you have support? I think of Jerry Maguire in the movie Jerry Maguire, where he said, I think of Cuba Gooding Jr., and Jerry saying to him, help me help you. Help me help you. This is sometimes we forget. We need to help our insurance adjuster come up with the right dollar amount in a disaster. Do we have a list of all the inventory and equipment? Do we have pictures? What could we do to make that insurance claim run more smoothly? Are we prepared? Do we have a fireproof safe on site with some of this data in it, pictures, whatever, you know, offsite or hard drives with backups? I don't know. Finally, little tip here. Again, there's a list here. Do we have a supply kit for the office? We may have an emergency preparedness kit at home or in our car, which I'm excited to talk about here in a minute. But for our business, do we have a supply kit with some emergency materials? I got to be honest, I don't think we do at the law firm or accounting firm. I mean, would we just tell all the employees, get out of here, run, woo, you know? Do we have an evacuation plan? Do we have, you know, we don't have a lot of employees. I'm sure there's companies that are much larger that have an emergency preparedness person assigned on site that would be in charge of this, that, or another. How big is your business? Do you need to have that? So anyway, little things to think about. Isn't that interesting? Especially if you're a one-man or one-woman show, again, thinking of your rental properties and what your disaster plan is if I had a rental property go under or problems. So think about that. So in the end of the article, I again mentioned the nationwide disaster planning guide. It's right there. You can not even download it. You click on it and it takes you right to it on the SBA website. See if that's of a help to you. Review it. Check it out. Let me see here if we have any comments from any of you, the listeners here on our chat line or on via email. Well, I got one comment here via email from a client, a listener. It says, Mark, what service or software do you use for your cloud backup? It's a great question. We are using they have different names here. Let me pull it up here. I want to look at who we're using just to share that. We are using Rackspace. We use Rackspace.com for our redundant backup offsite storage. Rackspace.com. They don't even know if I exist really, other than just being a customer. But that's who we use. So again, there's probably umpteen huge ones out there, and probably another 100 smaller ones. But if someone's got a company they like that's affordable for offsite storage or offsite backup, please type it in the chat line or let me know. Send me an email, mark@markjkohler.com. I'd like to share it with our listeners. But that's who we use, is Rackspace.com. And they've got a variety. They've got different services and logos and URLs underneath Rackspace. That's why it's hard for me to sometimes remember them. They have the Rackspace Cloud, and that's something we use too. So anyway, check that out if that's helpful to some of you. Exciting stuff. Woo! All right. Well, let me again, we'll come back to the business topics here in just a moment. We've got a quick comment here on the chat line. Rackspace is in San Jose. That's where they're based. And CrashPlan is good offsite backup for all platforms. That's called CrashPlan. So maybe go out and Google CrashPlan. Thanks for that comment, Thomas. Let me bring out my special guest today. I'm really excited to have this guest, and let me tell you why. I felt it would be most appropriate to rather, I was going to track down, you know, the Red Cross so-and-so leader of this, or the, you know, FEMA local Orange County representative, blah, blah, blah. And I thought, you know, I would rather find someone that's in the trenches locally doing some local things who I see as a mentor to me in emergency preparedness and share some practical tips with us. So I've asked a gentleman named Danny Kirkham. He's in my local area. He's a broker, a very successful real estate developer, investor, broker. And he has put together several programs locally for our neighborhoods and in the church and in families and through his real estate connections. He speaks about emergency preparedness, and he's a local representative that I think is holding a local emergency preparedness workshop coming up soon. So I'm excited to have him on the show and for him to share some of his insights. Danny, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Mark. I appreciate the opportunity to be here.
Well, you bet, man. I'm very excited to have you. And hey, speak up a little louder. I'm going to turn up the volume on your line too. So wherever you're at, feel free to yell on the phone if you need to. I want to make sure everybody can hear you. So Danny, man, tell us, how did you get to be or be interested in emergency preparedness? And I know you've got a family with kids, and that probably is an impetus enough. But what got you into emergency preparedness at the level you're engaged?
You know, Mark, it's a good question. It's hard to not watch the disasters that happen around the world, the Hurricane Sandy and everything that's going on back east, and not think about how would I protect my biggest asset. You know, yes, we have rental properties, we have stocks and other investments, but my biggest asset is my family, my home. And so it just in watching what's going on around the world, I wanted to make sure that I took care of what was most important, my family.
I love it. That, you know, spoken like a true father, and I just got my heart just pricked there when you said that, because that hit home for me. And I know many of you on the show listening might be single, divorced, never had children, or whatever the case may be. I want to transition right to this right at this moment, because I think this is a great point, because I want to make sure everybody's engaged here. This just isn't for families. You've implemented a program called Neighbor Helping Neighbor, Neighbor to Neighbor. Tell it, what is it titled, and how to, just maybe just real quick, I know I'm diving right into the meat of this, but what is this Neighbor to Neighbor program that you've got? Because it impacts everybody.
Good point, and it does. And neighbors are everyone. Think on my street, we have single individuals, families, older individuals, and Neighbors Helping Neighbors is a way to get the information on preparedness into the streets, into the homes, to teach people how to get ready for a disaster before it strikes. It's a simple way to take it's using the power of three is what it is. It's what do you do the first 3 minutes, the first 3 hours, the first 3 days, 3 weeks, 3 months after a disaster, and then you get prepared for it just at one step at a time. So you start with the first 3 minutes, you get ready for that, and you move on to the next step.
Ooh, I love it. Now, this Neighbor Helping Neighbors program is really it's going like wildfire around the country. I mean, there's major organizations behind this. This is not just something that you thought up, is it? I mean, this is everywhere right now.
It has gone viral, basically. It's based on the internet, and it's been taken to, we've had people report back all across the United States and many foreign countries. A meeting was just held in Russia last week where people got together in their local community and got ready, helped get ready for disasters.
Wow, they wouldn't be in Chernobyl, would it? I'm just throwing that out. Maybe they're a little behind the eight ball. Now they're planning in retrospect. Okay, that was terrible. Okay, so let's throw this out. Crazy. And Russia, even neighbor helping neighbor. Because here's the thing, we're a family. You know what was interesting is when 9/11 hit, it didn't matter what your race was, what political you follow, politician you followed, what political party you were of, what religion you were. Everybody, wasn't it interesting, nationwide, everybody just seemed to pull together. And it was sad months later when everybody kind of went back to their camps. But a disaster is really blind to all that. And if we, this is where neighbor helping neighbor means we got to look out for the single person down the street, or the single mom, or the single dad, or the kids. Or really, this is a comprehensive, where you look out for each other. How does the program work?
Okay, good question. You know, I watched this morning where policemen were trapped in their precincts back in New York. They couldn't get out to help people. In a disaster, you're exactly right. It's the people around you are going to be the first responders. The way it works is it's based on a block meeting. We had a block meeting in our street a couple of weeks ago. We set out invitations. We invited everybody on our street to come over to our house. We got together for an hour, and the first thing we did was we put together a list of contact information and what specific training and assets each individual could bring to a disaster. I had no idea that my attorney next door, my neighbor next door, happens to be a former firefighter and EMT. So he had training that I had no idea about. Three doors down, she's a nurse. I had no idea she was a nurse. And so we found out who had which training, who had chainsaws if trees fell down in a disaster. Then we gathered all the contact information for everybody so that we can, you know, if my fire alarm goes off in my house, my neighbor can call me if I'm out of town. The next step then is we introduced them to this program where it's internet-based, where they can sign up, and once a month they'll get an email that has a link to a three-minute video that talks about that topic for the month. You know, the first one is how to make a family emergency plan. The next one talks about how to make a three-minute kit that you tie to your bed to help you, you know, what you need to do right after disaster. If a disaster happens at night, you need to get out and get your family and neighbors out as well. And then the next month, you get an email that gives you a link and some brochures and a video for the next phase. And it's the way to get ready for disaster is to take it one step at a time and to just start.
I love it. And, you know, this is amazing. I didn't even know it was now, anybody can sign up to be a neighborhood leader, right? I mean, I could go to Neighbor Helping Neighbor, sign up and say, I'm going to help my neighborhood or my block, and I could spearhead it myself. Is that right?
Absolutely. Anybody can sign up, and that's why it's spread so far. The website is NHN, stands for Neighbors Helping Neighbors, so it's NHNpreparedness.com.
NHNpreparedness.com. I love it. Lisa, type that up on our chat line for everybody. This is way cool. Now, okay, now this is just one thing I know you're doing, and I just heard about this and was able to track you down. I was so excited to get you to come on the show. But this is bigger for you in some ways. Now, I want to just, before we talk about this Saturday thing you're doing, what are you doing at a micro level? What do you do with your family? Do you store some food and water and energy? What have you done? And I guess it starts in steps, and we're going to get blown away, I have a feeling, with what you've done. But tell us what you've got and how it got started.
Okay, good question. In our family, we started with the basics. My wife took something as big as emergency preparedness, and she said, how can I break this down? The first step is, what do you need to do to get out of the house after an emergency? Now, I live in Southern California. We don't have so many hurricanes, but we got plenty of wildfires and earthquakes. And so to be able to get out of your home after disaster, you need tied to your bed in a plastic bag that you can tear open, a pair of shoes, a flashlight, a whistle, a pair of sturdy work gloves. After the Northridge earthquake, I talked to people that they got out into the middle of the street, no clothes on, and cut up feet because of the broken glass. So this gives you the first step to be able to get out of your house. And then we took it the next step. Okay, what's the first 3 hours? That this focuses a lot on search and rescue equipment, the building a radio that you can tune in that's battery operated, the power might be out, the fire extinguisher, first aid kits, pry bars, so you can open up a door or a window that needs it that could be stuck. Your basic your documents, important documents, need to be someplace you can grab and go. And oftentimes, when FEMA may require some documentation, your Social Security card to be able to give you assistance. These are things that you need to get ready for the first 3 hours. And so we got that together. The next step is 72-hour kits. What do you do the first 3 days after a disaster? Focus on some basic food supplies, and you need water. For example, you need a gallon per person per day. Right now, they've got this massive flooding going on, but communities are without water. They're without electricity, and chances are I'm told that it could be a week or 2 weeks that they before they get power or water back on. So you need to have some basic supplies on hand. And so we got that together in our home, and we've encouraged our neighbors now to do the same.
I love it. I know it goes, and I know it goes on and on. I just want to add to it and say, my wife's amazing. She's put together these little red backpacks. She found a cool website where you could buy these 72-hour backpacks, and each one of the kids and I myself, we each have a backpack under our bed that I could grab, and it's got 72 hours worth of food, water, and some basic emergency supplies. And she says, take an old pair of shoes and put them in your backpack, so you can just throw on shoes if you need to. And run out the door. Do you know what I got last week, Danny, too? I was so excited. I got a generator. That's what I got. I got to be honest, when hearing about this storm that was hitting the East Coast, I've been needing a generator. I've been wanting one. So I bought some extra gas cans, bought a fairly affordable. It's not one of these huge, you know, Home Depot monstrosities, but it's a decent generator where we could charge phones, we could run a microwave, turn on the fridge for 2 or 3 hours a day, and I've got enough gas that it could run for 3 or 4 days nonstop, which is plenty for a few weeks. But anyway, I was kind of excited about that. Do you have a generator?
You know, that's one thing we haven't gone yet. That's something that's really important to have. Yeah, you're inspiring me now, Mark. I'm going to have to go get myself a generator. One thing I've been sure to cover, though, is that in a disaster, you need to be able to cook food. And so we store propane tanks, and at one of the local hardware stores, you can get a container or a connector that connects a standard propane tank, the big ones, to a small cooking stove that use the small propane tanks. I can serve food for my whole neighborhood for weeks based on the heat, on the fuel that we have stored up.
Oh, well, you got me. I'm inspired now, too. I don't have that at all. I don't have any propane on my site, and I'm not sure. I know my wife was working on our storage of food for 3 months or longer, and I don't know if we have a cooking apparatus to make bread or just fry something up. And so that's a really good point. I was also the other day just looking around for can opener. I swear I couldn't find a can opener. I was went on a scout camp out. Those that follow me on Facebook know that I'm a scoutmaster, and we were on a camp out and didn't have a can opener. Believe that. Talk about a scout being unprepared. And so I was just complaining about that. We need to make sure we have more can openers around. But anyway, this is really just really insightful. Now tell me, I'm so inspired by what you've already been talking about. You're such a good example to me. Now you're doing a Saturday workshop that you've kind of put together as part of this neighbor helping neighbor as well. Do you mind talking about that?
Yes. We've actually done quite a few different workshops in different areas. My next one is actually not coming up until May, but the Neighbor Education Initiative has spread so fast that all different cities and communities around us, I know there's one coming up in San Clemente, and other communities around us, it's taken on, it's kind of a legacy of its own and just run, which is the beauty of it. That's the whole reason why we created it, was to get people prepared and get everyone ready, as many people have to listen.
Okay, now I went to one of yours that you organized, and I thought it was phenomenal. I know you were there talking about food storage with your wife, and it was exciting to see what you two had done. But this workshop is something anybody could really put together with their little neighborhood group, have a little Saturday set up. When I was there, there was emergency supply vendors. There was the Red Cross was there. They were talking about what they do. And the local chamber and the local cities and the local fire and police, they love little workshops like this where they can show up and tell people what to do. I mean, when you organized this one in the past, I mean, it turned into quite a big affair. Everybody comes out of the woodwork for things like this, don't they?
They really do. You know, when I invited my neighbors came to our little block meeting a couple weeks ago, we were talking about who hadn't arrived yet, and one of my neighbors said, "So, did anyone respond back to your e-bite and say they were not interested in preparedness?" I had to laugh because, you know, no one is. Everyone is and should be excited about what they can do to be more prepared.
No, that's a great point. I love it. I love it. You know, I can turn down a neighborhood barbecue once in a while. You know, I may not want to go eat a burger with my neighbor, but I definitely, if there's a disaster. It, disasters are colorblind. We're gonna jump in, and I think most people have that good nature where they'll jump into a burning house to save a child. And they'll do whatever it takes to help a neighbor, and it's really amazing. That I think this is a characteristic of, I'd like to say it really can be an American characteristic. I'm sure many, many people around the world are constantly jumping in and saving others too. But I think we need to stand up and just be much more diligent in this emergency preparedness. Now, let's go back to business. I just wanted to get your take on this too. I know you're a successful broker. You've got real estate. Have you done anything unique with business preparedness? Do you have any insights or thoughts you'd like to share there that might be helpful?
You know, I was inspired by looking at your blog post about having a disaster plan for a business. I can't emphasize that enough. If a disaster was to happen here and it would take out my server, my office, what would happen then? So, you covered that already. It was really, really well done that way you talked about that. For me, it's just the same things that you're talking about. I've gone through my rental properties and with a video camera to video what's there. I do this on a regular basis. I've dropped off to clients little first aid kits and things to just get let them know what's important and how to be better prepared.
I love it. Thank you. Great comment. Well, let's. I've got a couple emails here. The chat line is active here. People are making some comments. Please, folks, if you have a comment on what you're doing, I'd like to hear it here. I mean, there's so much more we could talk about. And I've got some questions here that I would like to cover. But if you have a comment, please dial in, press number one. We'd like to hear from you. Or, again, many of you that are shy are sending me emails, which is fine, and comments on the website or on the chat line here. We've got Thomas points out it's www.crashplan.com. That's crashplan.com. The question about the emergency preparedness website is NHN, that's Neighbors Helping Neighbors, preparedness.com. Lots of neat videos there, too. My wife was showing me that when I tracked down you for this interview. She was like, hey, you got to talk to Danny. He's been pushing this. So this is really cool. Okay, one of the questions was that I got via email is, Mark, could you and Danny comment on energy? What are you doing for heat and energy in the home for longer than a 3-day period? Now, that's a tough one for me. I paraphrased a little bit of that. But that's a tough one for us because here in Southern California, we're so inclement, if that's the right word. We never go much colder than 50 degrees, worst case scenario, or much harder than 100 degrees, if worst case scenario. So I don't – Danny, have you really taken the energy – what have you done for energy, per se, besides propane or batteries for flashlights? I don't know. What are your comments there? What would you say?
You know, I think you hit it on the head. Disaster preparedness is really a local situation. It's not, are we going to have a disaster? It's which one is it that's most likely to affect me? Now, here in Southern California, you know, we don't need stores of heating oil or coal or because, like you mentioned, we don't have disasters. You don't have a lot of cold. For us, yeah, we've got propane, we've got batteries, extra gasoline, you've got a generator and fuel for it. That's generally all we need here in Southern California, but really people need to evaluate what's needed in their local area.
Awesome. Well, I've got a comment here from Mike on email. He says, Mark, I just got a call from I'll just read it. Mark, I actually got a call and an email from my daughter that is back east right now. They don't have power, but their cell sites were up, so that she was able to call me and send me an email. However, a lot of places that don't have cell phones are using two-way radios or ham radios. What are your thoughts about this? So, I don't know much about that. Do you know much about these ham radios, Danny, and what role they can play?
Absolutely. A ham, short for amateur. An amateur radio is a radio that you can purchase. They can sell an imported version for under $100, and you can get a license, which isn't hard to get. And these radios can actually communicate several miles through line of sight, and you can also connect to repeaters that will transmit the signal even through the internet or to other radio towers across the area. I'm a ham radio licensee. My wife is. Three of our children have their licenses. The youngest got his at age 10. It's a matter of going to QRZ, the website, and practicing for the test, taking the test at the local area, a local facility, and then you get your license. We had a major power outage here in Southern California about a year ago, and by the time I got home from work, my kids knew the source of the power outage, what happened, how long before it would come back up, because they were listening to the radio. So it's a great, great resource.
So you are a ham radio operator.
I am. I am. In
my
business,
okay.
So are four of my three children and my wife.
Now, the only experience I have with ham radio, I think, is in the movie Die Hard with a Vengeance, when Bruce Willis is trying to track down the bad guy, and he gets some guy on a ham radio to patch him into, you know, the FBI or something. I was like, ham radio? Oh, this is crazy. But, the guy had, you know, shut down all of the cell sites and this and that. So who knows about it. But I guess with terrorism nowadays, and they're talking about the technological cyber terrorism, it could be realistic that ham radios may be all we have, and we've got to go back to the basics. Now, tell us that website again where you got licensed as a ham radio operator and where you could buy ham radios. Where is this again?
Okay, the website is QRZ.com, and it's put up by one of the associations of radio operators. And you can go on there, and you can hit the practice test. And the test that you take to get a license is only about 30 questions, 30 or 35 questions. And you can get 70% correct and pass the test. It's just a matter of going through and memorizing the answers. You can take classes. There are books. There's online resources. But bottom line is you just need to pass the test. And then you learn how to use the radio by actually using it. Now,
Oh, no, go ahead.
To purchase a radio, you can, you know, we bought our first one on eBay and a few years ago, and it cost about $250 used. Now, brand new ones are under $100 and way better quality and durability than the one that we have. So okay. Buy them online.
Now, let me ask a question here. I just got an email about this. This is from a woman named Susan. She says, Mark, do I really need a ham radio? Why can't I just get one of those radios that winds up and I can get access to a radio program? Why would I need a ham radio? I think that's a good question, Danny. Why did you go to that extent?
Great question. Well, the nature of the radio is the typical radio that we have, and we have those too, battery-operated and solar and hand winding. You can only listen to information. You can't transmit information. There's a disaster on my street, a power line has fallen down, or a street light has fallen down, I need to be able to communicate that information. I can grab my ham radio. Even if all cell service and all phone service is down, I can get somebody on a ham radio. That's the reason for it.
Oh, okay. I got it. And I've got on the chat line, I've got Lisa, who, of course, is our studio operator. She's kind of like Howard Stern has Robin. I've got Lisa. And she chimes in here that her husband is a ham radio operator. So I'm going to call out Lisa right here. Hey, Lisa. I kind of play like Howard here. I'm going to call out Robin. Lisa, so do you know how to run a ham radio, Lisa?
I'm not really. I watch him do it. He wants my daughter to learn how to do it, though, before she's allowed to have her cell phone. So, yeah. She'll
does
learn
he
it before
say the
I
word,
do, I'm sure.
Okay, I want to know, does he say the words breaker, breaker at any point?
No, but what's funny is I'll run in behind him and I'll start saying things like that we used to say on the CB radios when we were in the trucks with my dad. I'll run behind him. I'll be like, hey, breaker, breaker.
There you go.
But
I love it.
No, he doesn't. But he rambles off his code name and all that. I don't know.
Lisa, you're awesome. Thanks for chiming in. I love it. That was pretty high tech. Hey, Danny, you are awesome. This has been very, very inspirational for me, exciting, and we've only got 1 minute left here. Any final words in just a few seconds here that you would like to share with everybody?
Yes, the most important thing about preparedness is to start. It doesn't matter where you start, just start. Start with the little things. Build up from there. Go to the website. Go get a 72-hour kit, order online, just get started. You'll be grateful that you did.
I love it. You have been phenomenal. Great insight, and what a good example to many of us. I know I may see you at Home Depot tonight picking up a generator, and I'll be there getting some propane tanks. So, much obliged. Thanks again, Danny. That is awesome. Thanks for being on the show and sharing all that with us. And folks, thank you to you for spending some more time with us here. Now, let me just point out a couple announcements. I've got 3 more workshops this year. Get out to Orange County in 3 weeks for November 17th and come to Hawaii on December 1st. Get a tax write-off. Come visit. And thanks for listening to the show. Share this with your friends and family. What a powerful topic today. Send them a link. Like me on Facebook when I show you my Halloween costume tomorrow. So happy Halloween, everyone.
Thanks for listening to another hour of refreshing strategies to better live your American dream.
Don't forget to get your free copy of Mark and Matt's ebooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.